Today's show, a potential new compensation model in college athletics, plus a division split, the transfer portal's humming, FSU screw job continues, and the race for the Case champion is crowned.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
It made no sense. This committee was not good. I think that's it. I mean, this committee was a mess.
Russ Dellinger.
This opens the door for schools to buy the NIL rights of their players. And in that way, completely cutting off and eliminating NIL collectors.
And SI's Pat Forte.
You don't hear anybody coming out and saying, well, we'll go ahead and cut staff. We'll go ahead and stop building facilities. We'll go ahead and cap head coach salaries or assistant coach salaries. That's not part of the conversation. We'll see if that changes, but I'm pretty sure I know it will not change.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod. It's wild out there. Free agency is spinning fast in the transfer portal. Got 11-1 starting quarterbacks leaving as sophomores. We got all sorts of stuff, more details on FSU snub. But I wanted to get to this story by Ross. I know Pat is in on this in certain ways, too. That could have a huge, say the least, impact on how college athletics will be played going forward. I'm just going to read some of this story. In a letter sent to Division I members and obtained by Yahoo Sports, NCAA President Charlie Baker outlines a groundbreaking and radical change to the NCAA Division I athletics model, describing as a new forward-looking framework. According to Baker's proposal, schools that choose to be part of a new subdivision, they can opt in or opt out, are required to meet strict minimum standards rooted in athlete investment. Members of the new subdivision will be permitted to strike name, image, and likeness deals with their own athletes, a significant move away from the current NIL structure. However, the most impactful benefit of this new model is a framework by which schools can directly compensate athletes through a trust fund. Schools within the new subdivision will be required to distribute to athletes thousands of dollars of additional educationally related funds without limitation. There is no cap on the amount of funds that a program can provide an athlete. Quote, it kickstarts a long overdue conversation among membership that focuses on differences that exist between schools, conferences, and divisions, and how to create more permissive and flexible rules across the NCAA that put student athletes first, Baker writes. Colleges and universities need to be more flexible. NCAA needs to be more flexible too. Entry into the subdivision. So this would be sort of a super division one, super FBS. I don't know what you'd call it. Entry into the subdivision requires a school to invest at minimum $30,000 per year per student athlete into what is termed an enhanced educational trust fund for at least half of the school's countable athletes. Schools would determine when athletes receive the amount, which four-year athletes total at least $120,000. Schools must continue to abide by the framework of Title IX, ensuring that 50% of the investment may be directed towards women athletes, female athletes. Ross, that's the basic deal. This sounds like pay for play or direct compensation without quite being direct compensation, because we're compensating a trust fund and then the trust fund is giving educationally related expenses. But it feels like pay for play to me, and not everyone's going to be able to do this. What else you got here? Explain this like I'm a 5-year-old, because I am.
The part of how everyone's not going to be able to do it is the point, right? That's the point. You know, I think me and Pat certainly have written about it the last couple years quite a bit is that, and really going back probably 5 to 10 years, is that we are headed toward a separation between the high resource, high revenue producing athletic departments in Division 1A and those lower resource programs. And they can't any longer coexist for a lot of reasons. And I think I wrote this a couple weeks ago from a Knight Commission meeting we talked about a little in the pod, is that the House case, the House versus NCAA antitrust case, is going to force the NCAA to change its model, especially if they want to settle the case, which sounds like they're trying to. They have to change the model. The House case is seeking not only NIL retroactive damages, but broadcasting damages. But the third part is that it is basically would eliminate, if it wins the case, the NCAA's NIL restrictions in policies and rules and all that stuff. So it is forcing the NCAA to change. And how do you force a separation? You create minimum standards that others cannot meet, right? And that's what's happening here. It is pretty radical. Will it pass exactly as it is? Unlikely. Will it pass at all? I would guess it will, because some version of it will, because of the House case forcing this. But it's quite interesting. It is revenue sharing without saying revenue sharing. I mean, how are these schools going to get the money, or how are these schools? What money are these schools depositing into this trust fund? It's their own revenue. Right. So it is, in a sense, revenue sharing. And the biggest part of it for me, well, there's two really interesting parts, one on NIL and one on the revenue piece. The revenue piece, there's, as Dan mentioned, there's no cap. So schools can put in this, deposit in this, an unlimited amount. They just have to do at least 30,000 per athlete per year for at least half of their athletes. The NIL part is really interesting. It's going to get overshadowed by the revenue part. But this opens the door for schools to buy the NIL rights of their players. And in that way, completely cutting off and eliminating NIL collectives.
Really interesting. Pretty bold step from an organization that has refrained from bold steps and resisted bold steps for a lot of years. But they don't have much choice. I think Ross kind of laid it out there that the House case is forcing their hands, as other court cases have kind of pushed the NCAA further down this path. And Charlie Baker, to his credit, has come in and said, well, we're not just going to kind of halfway try to do stuff. We're going to actually try to find a significant substantive way to change the model that is going to keep it sustainable, that's going to keep us from, you know, completely being destroyed in court, and we'll kind of remodel things as we get further down the road. Now, how many schools does this push out of the elite subdivision? I guess we'll find out. What is the damage to non-football sports? I guess we'll find out. What's the damage to things like the NCAA basketball tournaments, men's and women's, that people love, that have all comers? I guess we'll find out. But this is, I think, a kind of a bit of a watershed step here that had to happen, that they were forced to make happen. But I am glad to see that they're not, once again, just going back to the same playbook and saying, well, let's see if we can figure out a little incremental change to thread a needle to kind of move the ball an inch or two down the road.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. Obviously, we'll see what comes out in the end, but this is easily I think you had a line in there, Ross. It's the boldest move NCAA president I've ever heard of. I mean, this is kind of like talk show. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of crap we dream up and go, well, what if you do this?
He's been listening to the pod. Charlie Baker's been listening to the pod.
Traffic is up, and we appreciate all governors of Massachusetts, we appreciate you. Couple practical issues here. So just on first glance, one is like 50% of your people need at least $30,000.
Yeah. So do the math.
Do you still get a scholarship?
Well, that's a good question. There are a lot of unanswered
scholarships
questions
are worth more than 30. Almost all of them are.
Yeah, there are really a lot of unanswered questions to this. I think in Las Vegas, Charlie Baker will sit down 101, right, with SB at the SBJ forum, and he'll probably answer a lot of these questions, but he's probably not going to have an answer for some of these questions. It should be noted, this is just a proposal, right? It's got to be approved, and it is a conversation starter, so to speak. But if you do the math on the 30,000, so a normal athletic department, D1 athletic department, I just put it at 400 student, some 400 student athlete, are getting some sort of scholarship.
Oh, okay.
You know, even a partial. And it is. I think the average is around 350 to 400.
Okay, yes.
If you do 400, half of your athletes would be 200. 200 times 30,000, right, which is the minimum. Again, there's no cap. It's 4.5 million. Is that right? I think that's right. Somewhere around there, I believe. Now I got to do it type it in here, but I think it's somewhere around
6 million.
Oh no, 6 million. Okay, that's what it is.
Three times
okay.
Two.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. Sorry. Oh boy. Yeah.
This is why our harebrained ideas rarely work.
Yeah, we don't
double check. I had to double check my math. I was like,
no math for us. So 6 million at the minimum on average, a program's going to spend $6 million. On their athletes in
just
this revenue sharing department. Again, more unanswered questions. Does this include walk? Does the total include walk-ons? You know, I don't know. But
so I looked major athletic departments, the ones that do everything. Stanford, 900 kids. UCLA, 881 athletes. UNC Chapel Hill, 986. Michigan State, 876.
Those are the top, right?
Those are the top. You get to the SEC, and this is one of the secrets to SEC spending.
Yeah, a lot smaller.
Yes.
Yeah.
Auburn, 500. Mm. Ole Miss, 417. Yep. Mississippi State, 525. You get to lower Division I, right? St. Peter's, that you know had the great run in the NCAA basketball tournament a couple years ago, that you want to keep 320. I don't know where the hell they're getting the money for 160 at 6 million, that's still, or
30,000.
Yeah. A UMass, 693, kind of in the middle, right? Because they got football and hockey. Like, where do you go with this? Or do you just do the scholarships, which are capped, you know, like your soccer team can have 11 or 9 and they divvy it up. Will be very interesting in terms of what is feasible. So is it, will schools cut sports to stay in the FBS? If you're going to call this the new FBS, I would think they would.
Yeah.
That's going to, you know, buckle up. My opinion is not particularly popular on this, and we'll, there's the litigation's coming, man. Woo.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, no. I mean, this is a potential Armageddon scenario for Olympic sports. It's going to lead to cuts in those areas. A lot of ADs have wanted to do it anyway. Now they're going to have full cover, I guess you would say, to do so. You know, there will be Title IX ramifications, obviously. And again, this is one area where they are trying to thread a very narrow needle with Title IX here. But the bottom line is, it's going to lead to eliminated sports, eliminated scholarships, eliminated opportunities for athletes in many of those sports. And, you know, I think in some areas the answer is just going to be, well, you know, U.S. Olympic Committee, you guys go figure it out. And maybe the Olympic Committee should figure it out more on that front. But, you know, my stance on this has been clear for quite a while. It runs counter to Dan's. I think that athletic departments were not created simply to be beholden to football at all costs, and especially the spiraling increasing costs. But that's where we're headed, and that's what this is going to increase that likelihood. You don't hear anybody coming out and saying, well, we'll go ahead and cut staff. We'll go ahead and stop building facilities. We'll go ahead and cap head coach salaries or assistant coach salaries. That's not part of the conversation. We'll see if that changes, but I'm pretty sure I know it will not change.
One thing I don't know that we've mentioned, we may have, my head is fairly clouded this morning, but Title IX, you still have to comply with right. Title IX, which means 50%, right, of the funds put into this trust fund, 50% will go to women athletes. Now you can call, you know, I mean, that's a federal law that schools have to follow, although they don't follow it very well at times. But people I've talked to about this proposal have referred to the Title IX piece of this, that you still must follow Title IX, as a cap itself, right? As something that will limit how much schools can spend, because whatever they spend on the football players, maybe not the same amount, but you can't be too far off, right? Need to go to the women athletes.
Astounding for some of these elite women's Olympic sport. I mean, you go to Texas A&M, you might be making $75,000 a year playing softball. I mean, yeah, you know, like incredible. They don't make that in like the NWSL's average, the National Women's Soccer League. I think they just got a new TV deal. Maybe it'll go up, but like their average salaries in like below $50,000. I think it's in the 30s. Mm. You can make way more than that playing college. That's pretty wild.
I'm suspicious, but I think one of the caps will be we'll just have fewer athletes, and you know where the athletes are coming out of. So
they'll have fewer athletes, but the ones that are there, the main schools are not stopping at $30,000.
Right.
No. Not a chance.
They're not
going
to stop at $30,000. So some women athletes are going to make a killing. Many others are not. They're going to get their sport eliminated.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel a little more for the ones who are going to have their sport eliminated right now than the ones that aren't going to get paid. But
yeah, understood.
I do. I wish my kids were still in school.
Get back in there, Brooke. Damn, Pat, you would have been retired by now.
I know.
Well,
too early.
One other thing about this, you might ask, like, why would schools do this? What would the benefit be? And the benefit is, you basically get to make your own rules. So this is a part of this we haven't hit on too much, but it's important. This, you know, split, this separation, this separate subdivision will. The schools in the subdivision will be able to have power and control over rulemaking and policymaking, which, of course, includes things like roster limits and scholarship limits and accountable coaches and probably sanctioned sponsorship of sports as well. They get a lot of control over decisions. And, you know, again, I think Dan read it in my story, too. There's another point of this is that this proposal, right, all still stays under the NCAA umbrella, which probably 95% of people within the NCAA agree with. 5%, you could probably find have an issue with that and would like to be completely from underneath the NCAA. But this proposal, not surprising, right? The proposal comes from the NCAA. So, of course, it maintains the NCAA umbrella and maintains control everybody under the NCAA. In all the championships, and I know Pat's written a lot about the NCAA basketball tournament and its future, at least in this proposal right now, championships stay the same. NCAA still puts on all the championships, except of course, for FBS football, which is run by the CFP. So some little notations there. It'll be interesting to see how this proposal will change or be tweaked and what people say in Vegas today about it.
Okay. Well, that does answer one of my earlier questions here was, you know, what does happen to the basketball tournament? If they are going to continue to have, you know, as it is now, the, the basketball tournaments are Division I. It is FBS and FCS. And so if it's FBS and FCS and Super FBS, and they're all still competing together in the basketball tournament, that is one palatable potential way to make this work.
Yeah, it'll still be, obviously, that divide grows maybe more monetarily, but we have seen it doesn't matter.
Right.
Nobody at St. Peter's didn't want to go to Kentucky. St. Peter's won. I think there was a year St. Bonaventure played LSU. Their LSU's basketball coach made more than the entire St. Bonaventure budget. You know, so some of it is, it's not fair. Well, that's true. But there isn't a there isn't even a team manager that wouldn't go to Kentucky. There isn't there's nobody, and the coaches, everyone. So it's always been that way. Basketball, you can make it work. Anyway, very, very interesting. We will see. This is going to be another offseason of a lot of fascinating movements into where we're going in college athletics. Just that conversation and the fact an NCAA president put it out there is alone, like, stunning compared to 5 or 10 years ago. Well, another stunning one. Kyle McCord is a sophomore at the Ohio State University, ineligibility, junior. He went 11-1 this year. Maybe you heard of him. Played in a big game a couple weeks ago. Completed 65.8% of his passes, 3,170 yards, 24 touchdowns, 6 interceptions in his first year as a starter at The Ohio State University. 11-1, number 6 in the country. One touchdown drive from beating Michigan, being in the playoff. Got hit, not his fault, in the last interception. He's in the transfer portal. It seems to be kind of a mutual decision. The transfer portal is, I say this not in a bad way, just absolutely wild in that things like this are going on. Not just is Kyle McCord looking for greener pastures, but Ohio State is looking for greener pastures. Like, it's good. And in the history of college football, you say, well, hey, we're pretty set here. Kyle's going to develop Kyle another year or two. We're going to be really good. Ohio State, Ryan Day wouldn't commit to him as a starter in a press conference the other day. McCord say, we got to go. And I think this is the more surprising. There's Dylan Gabriel at Oklahoma. This isn't even a lone thing. But this level of churn where it's, like, I know fans are down on Kyle McCord, but the guy's pretty good. I mean, that one hit, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Kyle McCord. Pat?
Yeah, that's the new reality here, is you can be the established starter and a winner at some of the biggest programs out there, and you're still maybe going to end up in the portal, whether you're pushed or whether you jump. And as you said, maybe this was a mutual decision. But that's the reality, is everybody's looking for an upgrade every year. Like, unless you got Caleb Williams or Drake May or whatever, everybody is looking for an upgrade. So I described the scene outside Michigan Stadium that day when they lost to Michigan, and Kyle McCord came out of the locker room, and he hadn't even cut the tape off his ankle, and he hadn't taken the eye black out from under his eyes, and he was just the picture of misery. And he came over and kind of almost collapsed on his mom's shoulders. And you could tell he was heaving, and it was a very emotional scene. And I just think there was a lot of burden on this guy this year. And he was pretty darn good, but he wasn't C.J. Stroud, and he wasn't Dwayne Haskins, and he wasn't Justin Fields in terms of just being this overwhelming quarterback talent. And that's a place where they're used to that now. And he might be thinking, you know what? I gave everything I had, and it's not good enough for these people. I'm going to go somewhere else. It's a hard reality, but that's kind of where we are in some parts of college football.
Yeah, that's been certainly the most shocking one that I've seen. I went back and tracked down all the quarterbacks in the portal and just like tweeted a list of. It's basically Power Five, a couple of Group of Five starters in there. I'll read them because it's pretty wild. Kyle McCord, Ohio State, of course. Dylan Gabriel, Oklahoma. Cam Ward, Washington State. Dante Moore, UCLA. Riley Leonard, from Duke, Grayson McCall from Coastal Carolina, Tyler Van Dyke from Miami, Will Howard, Kansas State, Will Rogers, Mississippi State, and DJU from Oregon State. All starters, all but I think one at the Power 5 level. Quite shocking.
I would say, though, Gabriel and McCord are like at a different level. Like, I understand in an essence. Cam Ward's program no longer in the Power 4.
Right. Yeah, DJ and Cam Ward, you can understand a little more. Oregon State,
right. Grayson McCall, Riley Leonard, his coach is leaving. You know, some different things. Dante Moore had flashes of greatness. The team's not that good. As you're getting developed properly, you can see some of them, right? You're the starter as a sophomore at Ohio State. Like, that's the dream of 100 years of Ohio kids.
Yeah.
Right. And you've got, and Ohio State isn't sitting there saying, I don't know who Ohio State's going to get better. That's now they have Aaron Orland coming in, a recruit. But like, it's just, that's how cutthroat this is. Let me read from a really brilliant series of books, Epic Athletes, that are just available right now as a good gift. If you have a young gift, you need a gift for a young reader, sports fan in your life. Just coincidentally had one sitting here. The Tom Brady book. It's quite a book. Really teaches values to young people. Really a good Christmas gift. But
who's the author?
As an aside. Anyway, Tom Brady, after his sophomore year at Michigan, hadn't played, and he walked into Lloyd Carr's office. He was obviously Lloyd Carr was the Michigan coach then, and he said, "Coach, I think I'm going to transfer." And Carr said, "Why?" This is like back then. Now you just be like, "This guy."
Well,
like,
yeah, you're.
Nick Saban was begging players to talk to them, like just don't enter the portal. Call us, and maybe we got a plan for you, right? Carr's like, "What? You leaving? What? I haven't played in 2 years." I don't think I'm getting a fair chance, Tom said, and I don't know if I'll ever play here. Carr said, you know, Lloyd Carr, always the gentleman. He said, okay. He said, it'll be the biggest mistake of your life, something you'll regret for the rest of your life. You came here to be the best. You came here because of great competition. If you walk away now, you'll always wish you had stayed and tried to compete and tried to become the best. If you leave, you'll always wonder what would have happened if you stayed. And he told Brady, go home to your apartment, think about it, come back tomorrow. If you still want to leave, I'll sign your release. You had to sign a release back then. And Brady went home and got angry and said, that's right, I did come here. I will always regret it, and I'm going to prove him wrong. And he came back and said, I'm staying, and I'm going to prove to you that I'm a great quarterback. And Brady always says that was like one of the turning points of his career, right? Heartwarming tale from what seems to be seven generations ago at this point. And you know the funny part? He didn't play the next year either. Brian Greasy was the starter, and they won the national title. So it didn't even matter. Carr was like, pfft. But that's how this went in the ages of Tom Brady, which doesn't seem that long ago, to now, like, I know you went 11-1, but like.
You know what, though?
It's just a different era, man. I mean,
the comic, you know, I think a lot of coaches will say, about the transfer market right now. Well, you know, you always hear the grass is not always greener. You're going to regret it, right? The same thing that Lloyd Carr said to Tom Brady. Well, but let's be honest. I mean, there are plenty of success stories. We continue to see them, actually. Look at Bo Nix, right? Yeah. Look at Jaden Daniels. Penix. He might win the Heisman. So we're starting to see this, at least for the quarterback position, pay off, and maybe it will at Kyle McCord. I don't know what's been reported. I haven't. Yesterday was kind of swamped with stuff, so I didn't read any of the Ohio State coverage. Has anybody gotten more details on how this went down? I mean, right when I saw it, I thought, I wonder if Ohio State was like, there's the portal door. Surely not, but I was thinking all kind of stuff, right? I mean, I didn't.
Day did not commit to him being the starter next year. It was I don't want to get this wrong, but there's a little bit of mutual bid here, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with all of this, right? If we're going to have The players have the freedom. The coaches have the freedom. It's just a different era when this is going down. I agree. A lot of Kyle McCord may go off and have no regrets at all. Bo Nix stayed at Auburn probably too long, mm-hmm. right? Because
same with Penix at IU. He stayed probably 1 year too long.
1 year too long. So that I'm not a. It's just a totally different thing where you're like, wow, that's an established starter, and I don't know. I don't think it's like five alarm fires in Columbus right now. Oh my God, what are we going to do? They're going to get a quarterback. I mean, you think about the schools that are in this market right now, and we're just dealing with quarterbacks. Notre Dame, they're probably going to get Riley Leonard. That seems to be it.
Yep.
FSU needs a quarterback.
Yep.
Could be Dylan Gabriel. He may go to Mississippi State, though. He may go to Oregon. I don't know. Oregon could use a quarterback. Michigan might need a quarterback. Is J.J. McCarthy officially going pro? I think he is, but not officially, but I don't know. Is Dante Moore come back, and does he sit behind? These are all major programs in need of a quarterback. And obviously, USC's in the market for a quarterback.
Right.
Oklahoma now is probably in the market for a quarterback. I know they got
Washington. Yep.
Washington, like these are big time things. So everyone's looking. The 1 year rentals didn't seem to work that well last year. The guys that are just kind of moving, that are okay, like that didn't really work. But I think if you get them younger and developed, it has worked. You think of the Will Levises and the Penix and the Bo Nix and that type of stuff. The 1 year guys, I don't think were that great last year, other than DJ Ungavale.
Yeah, the only thing there, both Penix and Nix, there was some surprise that they weren't 1 year guys in 2022. You know, they transferred, and a lot of people thought then they were just going to go pro because they had good years, but then they stayed and had even better years. So, you know, there's not a lot of patience out there, but sometimes patience does help. And what the old Tom Brady stories and stuff can still be true. There can be value and great, you know, maturity and development lessons learned from staying in one place and learning and getting better at your craft. But they're also, that doesn't have to be the only route.
Right.
And it's not just, oh, knee jerk. Oh, what a terrible decision. This guy won't wait. You know, sometimes you need to go somewhere else. We've seen it. There's no one way to have success in college athletics. Sometimes moving helps. Sometimes staying put helps. Sometimes they're wrong, but you know, you can't just judge. You know, there's still so many people judging the portal as this terrible instant gratification thing when it's not necessarily true.
I was at, speaking of the portal, I was Monday night at the Nagurski presentation in Charlotte, and Sonny Dykes, TCU coach, was the speaker. And he got up there, and of course, you know, his 15-minute speech was about the portal and the portal day. And afterward, I said, like, I can't even believe you're here, giving that it's portal day. And he said, anyway, he picked up his phone and flashed it to me. He said, well, I've been working most of the time at the dinner. But he did step away, and he talked on the stage about the three kind of significant things in college athletics going on right now. And that's, Sonny's really good about this stuff, about the off the field stuff. He mentioned the portal, he mentioned NIL, and he mentioned conference realignment. He said things like, boy, UCLA and Rutgers can't wait. I got a good laugh from the crowd. But afterward, I approached him, and speaking of all of this, right, portal, the new NCAA model and all this stuff, and I approached him, and he said, you know, I didn't say it on the stage, Ross, and I know some other coaches have said it publicly, but we got to have revenue sharing. And it's funny because, you know, we're soon to get at least a proposal of that. I think coaches see these two things, the NIL in the portal colliding, you know, as we've talked about, to create this free agency, and it's time to have some structure. I don't know that this Baker model provides structure exactly as it is now. Maybe eventually with tweaks and stuff it will, with limitations and caps somehow. Maybe, it will be a little better, I guess, than it is now. But I wonder how it will impact the portal. You know, I mean, you think about if there is some kind of new model here, how will that model impact the portal? It's, I don't know, it's good. It should be interesting to kind of watch materialize.
Yeah, you heard that Harbaugh, like even during his, some of this might be recruiting, some of this might be just he hates the NCAA, so he wants to bash him, but he's like talking about revenue sharing during his, like, you made the playoff coach, right? And obviously he has a big platform at that moment. A lot of people watching. He's like, we got to share the money with the with the players. Even Maurice Claret went on social media and praised Jim Harbaugh. And I was like, okay, we're, I don't know what's going on here. They actually kind of have a lot in common. I think they actually, they would have been friends.
They actually do.
Yeah.
Long running battles with the NCAA.
You wouldn't think, but Claret and Harbaugh kind of, you know, two sons of Ohio. Harbaugh was born in Toledo, I think. So, yeah, they actually have more in common, probably. Claret's always fighting with Ryan Day. So maybe those two have more in common. Yeah. It can bring us together.
On that ESPN interview, I think it was with it's right after they were picked for the CFP, right? And with Reese Davis. And, like, it was unprompted. Like, Reese didn't ask about, right? And he just said, it's the players, and we need to share the revenue with them. So, yeah, that's been probably the biggest change, I would say, over the last year or so is coaches. And now you're seeing the trickle of administrators too come out publicly and say, hey, time to have some structure here. It's time to directly pay them. And part of what's happening, I think part of what's leading to that is this, this state of NIL, right? And the NIL collectives is what's, and I'm not saying they're bad or good, but certainly administrators wish them to be more more in-house, which according to this model is possible.
Well, at some point you want control.
I would say that that college administrators on the whole would just as soon not deal with collectives as they are currently structured. I think that they would prefer a different element of that part of the compensation model.
Yep.
All right. One other transfer, non-QB. We dealt with the QBs. They're the most recognizable. I mean, there's like 1,000 guys in this portal. It'll all sort out. It's chaotic. I think fans are really into it. I know there's a lot of anger and like, what the hell is going on? But it's wild. I mean, this is like NBA free agency was always fun on that July 1st. But this is just like mayhem. You can have 5 guys are leaving, 10 guys are coming. It's just like, what? Right, yeah. You're looking these dudes up, and you're like, "Wait, he started 7 games at, you know, Abilene Christian. He had 3 picks. He played UTEP. That's pretty good, right? Can he play? No one has any idea what's going on." No. Walter Nolan, though, the prize of the 2021 recruiting class, 2022 recruiting class,
2022 signing class. Yeah,
so, that class of Texas A&M is in the portal. That's a big one. Athletes like that are not always available. That he may have a bigger bidding war than any of the QBs. I don't know, but the A&M is clearing out a little bit, which is interesting because they brought in a defensive coach. Elko, and I think was Elko there when he signed or no? He left right around then.
Yeah, he might have helped recruit him, but Elko had been named the coach at Duke by the time Nolan came to campus.
So if anything, you would do that. Lot of speculation at Oregon State's Aiden Childs will follow Jonathan Smith to Michigan State. That would obviously be a big boost for the Spartans, who desperately need. I'm fascinated where Cam Ward goes also. And then last year, one of the transfers, Tyler Buckner, who left Notre Dame to go to Alabama. He is back in the transfer portal as a lacrosse player.
Isn't that great?
A legendary career out of Tyler Buckner.
He played, by the way, this lacrosse player played in like a pivotal close road game for Alabama this year.
They almost
lost. Yeah.
Like, you know what? Here's the thing. Like, Tyler Buckner's gonna be sitting in a bar when he's like 30 somewhere. Somebody's gonna come up and start talking sports or whatever and say, hey, did you play? It's like, yeah, I was a starting quarterback at Notre Dame and at Alabama, and then I played lacrosse.
Yeah, he's probably going to like, Johns Hopkins or something to play lacrosse. Pretty good athlete.
Yeah.
You an athlete, Tyler? too bad.
Don't look up his stats. They weren't that great, but he could still say, I was a starting quarterback at Notre Dame and Alabama.
Yeah.
Played lacrosse.
Not easy. Wasn't it like Jalen Hurts was like, didn't he win he won SEC championship game MVP and Big 12 championship game MVP or something like
that.
Yeah.
That was one of his claims. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Like, and no one knew he'd become Jalen Hurts as a pro, but it was like, you know what? That's a hell of a career right there.
Yeah.
Not easy to do. So yeah, good luck, Tyler. We don't know where you're going. We'll see if we can do it. There is one little interesting point, and Clay Travis brought this up. He's a Outkick and a lawyer, and he had an interesting point on this. We got to explore this more later. What if these athletes that are, because you're going, how many times are you guys transferring, right? DJ Ungolay still, like, what is happening? I thought they got this transfer thing, but if you're a grad student, you can transfer.
Yes.
You can graduate, and then if you get your next grad degree, you can transfer again, right? I think every time you get a grad degree.
I only followed it through one iteration of grad degrees.
Only one?
No, I mean, you may be able to transfer again. I don't know.
What? So his argument is, what happens when one of these guys sues for restraint of trade? Let's say it's DJ Ungola. He doesn't want to go pro because he's probably not a pro, but there's a endless parade of 1 year deals he can make to keep playing college football and make like $1 million. And he just keeps getting grad degrees at various schools. And sues the NCAA saying the 4 years of eligibility is a restraint of trade. Mm. You're prohibiting me from making a living as a college football player. This might be something they need to go to Congress to address. How long until we're like that second or third class, like it's almost like minor league baseball. Like there's some like chain smoking 34-year-old on the, although didn't we have a kicker that's like the Colorado kicker has three kids, right? He was from like Australia.
Yeah.
Right. Like what about that lawsuit where you're like, well, you're saying I'm out of eligibility. Why? I just keep getting degrees.
Well,
make $1 million and go get another degree, then go get another degree. I mean, there's a lot of degrees out there. We see these kids, guys get like two PhDs. They're $500,000 in debt. These guys are making money.
Look, if some school can figure an end around to make that work, they will. They will. They'd have 28-year-old DJ Uyunglele out there. But, you know, one thing we are getting closer. Ross, you may know the math on this, of rinsing out the extra COVID year. So the six-year guys.
Two
more years of
Well, this year counting, I think, and then next year, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Watch out for that one. Watch out for that one.
Yeah, you thought Stetson Bennett was old.
Here's the deal. And they can say, look, 25-year-old Stetson, he didn't even graduate, remember? He's 25 years old. He hadn't even graduated. It didn't negatively impact the sport. This is the thing. They have precedent that the colleges gave all these extra years. I mean, listen, it's funny, but you kind of can see where you're like, you know, you got a point. No?
Okay. I'm not buying it. I mean,
what? Stetson Bennett is 25 years old.
Yeah.
Did it hurt the sport? Was Stetson still in it?
No,
I agree.
No,
I would get rid of it. I'm just saying we've lost a lot of lawsuits in college athletics. Not on a win streak here.
Sooner or later, I would like the athletes to have enough self-respect to say, you know what? I'm 29 years old. I don't want to play with 18-year-olds anymore. Yeah.
Well, we just talked about these guys are going to be paying $100,000 out of the school. There's going to be more. I mean, forget it. I don't know. I don't know. It's going to be you're going to have to put like a under 25 distinction on it or something. Like soccer teams or something. It's all right. I'm telling you, it's crazy out there. All right. The FSU got screwed bit continues. And, still not the politicians started weighing in. That was always fun.
Yeah.
We need an investigation and what to happen and what we can do.
Congressional hearings.
Wait 51 weeks. We have a new plan. Okay, enough.
Yeah, that's right.
Trump tried to blame
Ron DeSantis. That was funny.
That was unbelievable.
I don't know if it was the governor's fault. I don't know, but I don't want to take a side on that fight. But I was like,
not enough lobbying by DeSanctimonious, I think he called him. Oh my God.
Love a good primary season. Like, does that sway a vote? Is there someone out there is like, you know what? That's right.
There might be a few Noel fans. There really might.
There may be. It wouldn't have happened under my watch. It would have. Yeah. But whatever. I'm not picking sides in the primary. Anyway, some funny stuff. But Heather Dinich, who covers the committee for ESPN, goes to all the committee meetings, was there and got some of the behind the scenes reporting on the breakdown. And this was the most interesting part on her ESPN.com story to me. It wasn't until the ACC championship game began to unfold. This is Saturday night. They're all sitting there together. You see those pictures of all those guys. Yeah. There's probably a woman or two in there. I think Kelly Whiteside
is the woman. Former USA Today reporter.
Yeah, why do they put a sports writer in there? Is that just to like try to appease us?
They've always done
That's a Bill Hancock thing, probably.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Former sports
see if it's
writer.
Still a thing without Bill Hancock.
Mm. Yeah. Kelly Whiteside. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Does she leak out info? She'd probably be under extra pressure not to. Anyway, it wasn't until the ACC championship game began to unfold, though, that members' opinions began to truly take shape. The group grew concerned as it watched the Noles struggle to get a first down in the first half. There is a section in the committee's protocol that specifically refers to the, quote, unavailability of key players that may have affected a team's performance during the season or likely will affect its postseason performance. Obviously, the missing Jordan Travis in the future and then second string quarterback Tate Rodemaker in this game and having third string quarterback Brock Glenn, who is a freshman and threw for 55 yards, and yes, the offense struggled. It's back to the story. That allowed the committee to do something it intentionally avoids every other week. Look ahead. Quote, people really wanted to talk about it, unquote, a committee member said. Quote, we don't really have that conversation while watching games, but we've got to talk about the elephant in the room. What just happened? We talked about 13. No, we talked about the teams they beat, and they were conference champs. All of it, it took a while. So this suggests that they were horrified watching the offense of Brock Glenn-led Seminoles and played a major role in Florida State coming to the conclusion that Florida State wasn't one of the four best teams and therefore shouldn't be in the playoff. The obvious problem here, I'll tee you up, Pat, is Brock Glenn will not play in the semifinal. He was there for this game. Rodemaker had a concussion and was almost cleared. So the presumption is, who the hell cares what they looked like under Brock Glenn? Mm-hmm. What about the running attack? What about the defense? But to be horrified and say this isn't a good offense because with Brock Glenn, agreed, but that is not a material. It's like saying Alabama didn't look good when they had Tyler Buckner leading the team.
Yeah. No, I mean, that drove me crazy. And I pointed that out in my column Sunday, and then when I read it, from Heather, and it was a good story from Heather. It gave you some insight into what people were thinking and how things went down. But that paragraph, which is not Heather's words, it's what the committee people were telling her, tells me how faulty the logic was here, that they were way overemphasizing what was happening with Brock Glenn at quarterback when he's not going to play in the playoff. And I saw Tate Rodemaker come in as an emergency substitute for Jordan Travis when he was injured last year in Louisville. I was at the game. They're down a touchdown. He leads them to 3 75-yard touchdown drives in the second half, throws 2 touchdown passes, had a 69-yard bomb to Johnny Wilson, ran for a key 3rd and 9 first down. I mean, he was a good player in that setting. He didn't play as well against Florida, but you can't just make this decision, they don't have Jordan Travis. They got nothing. So to have put that much weight on a game that was really all Florida State needed to do was win the game, and then it should have been a toss-out in terms of how they performed and how many yards they passed for, because they're playing with the third-string quarterback who had not played in college at all, really, to that point. So I just thought that was incredibly faulty logic, and I apologize to Heather. I put this on Twitter, that tweet, now 1.5 million views. People have gone crazy off of that. But I just think that this is what we're dealing with this committee in this instance. It was a really faulty way that they arrived at their decision of who's in and who's out.
Yeah, that's the that story. It was a good story, but that was the probably the only part of that story to me, right, that I was where I had the reaction of, oh, you know, I mean, that paragraph kind of was the gist of the story and was kind of the really unfortunate part that they viewed it the way they did. I hate to keep piling on the committee. It's an unenviable kind of thankless job. I blame the system. We talked about it already. The system just is the thing to blame here. And I was thinking about this over and over again recently. The line in the committee's rule book or policy or whatever you want to call it, about factoring in injuries and stuff, you know, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but I don't know that should have ever been in there, because in a way they were just following their whatever protocol, but I don't know that should even have been in there. And now you kind of think about that, but to assume the deal with Glenn, who, you know, wouldn't be playing in the game, and for that to impact such a huge decision is pretty incredible. And over the last day or so, and I'm sure it'll come up in Las Vegas at the summit with a bunch of administrators, is, hey, do we need to take a harder look at the committee process, especially given the fact that we're about to change and go to a 12-team playoff? And if you look at this from the 12-team playoff standpoint, if the rankings were the same, Florida State would have missed out on a bye. It would be the big thing. They would have had to play a first-round game. But the biggest thing the committee did in a 12-teamer is leave out the G5 is SMU. The G5 spot,
yeah.
Right? And leaving out SMU for a Liberty, you know, that didn't undefeated, but didn't play a Power 5 team at all and had a strength of schedule. I think that's 133 of 133 FBS teams. So in a 12-team playoff, Liberty would have been in, according to the rankings, and SMU would have been out. SMU team, by the way, that challenged itself, played two Power 5 teams and hung with Oklahoma until the fourth quarter.
That was huge. And I think Mike Oresko, the American Athletic Conference commissioner, had, you know, look, every committee, they'll say the committee's different every year, but they held, he points out, why did Central Florida undefeated not get a bid into the playoff? Why did Houston, why did Cincinnati one year, another year they made it? Because of strength of schedule, they said. You didn't play a Power 5 opponents. You didn't play enough good opponents, right? You have to play a great opponents. That's what matters. Strength of schedule matters. And then Liberty plays nobody.
Yeah.
And gets one spot ahead of SMU because SMU's got the losses to, again, to Oklahoma in a good game and stuff. And you go, what is this? Cincinnati was undefeated as group of five teams too. And I think that's the part that I'm with them. Like it made no sense. This committee was not good. I think that's it. I mean, this committee was a mess. You have a committee. The reason you want a committee is because what they had before was these computers. I've said this for years, wrote about it. Ideally, you have one computer formula that decides all this stuff. You build a computer formula. Everyone knows what goes into it. This is what you do. They'll never do that because this is college football. They hate like college, right? Like people like Ross and I can't figure out three times two. So we got to, you know, they're never doing the formula. They got to have, then they'll have a committee and they'll complain. But you'd have this, like the Harris poll, and you had all the voters, and guys would come up with all sorts of criteria that like didn't make any sense. And you go, wait a minute, someone needed to sit there and say, hey, Brock Glenn's not going to play. You can't count this. You need sober, smart people who understand the criteria. Say, wait a second. Yeah, Liberty's got zero losses and SMU has two, but SMU's losses are to TCU and Oklahoma. And they played a much better schedule and the AAC is a much better league. All that stuff. And go, oh, you're right. Because don't just slot them and all that things. I remember we did the book. We called up Harris poll voters that hadn't even watched Utah. Utah went 12-0 one year and then beat Alabama in a bowl game. And we called a bunch of Harris. They'd be like, I hadn't seen Utah this year. They look good. You're like, yeah, they have Alex Smith and Urban Meyer's their coach. Yeah, they're good, right? So all of that is like, you know, you need that sober-minded person to say, hold, hit the brakes here. This is what we got. And we didn't get that. You know, so like, how many people are upset? Next year, that's SMU should have been in over Liberty.
Yeah, SMU should have been. I will say, it was a hard call between Alabama and Florida State. That was a hard one. This one doesn't seem like a very hard call, and yeah, it went against SMU there, and I don't really understand it. And there's no system that's not going to produce howls of outrage. If you did, like Dan said, and you had one computer system, somebody would find fault with that. I remember very infamously John Calipari when he was at Memphis, and he hated their RPI rating. And he was like, somebody said, well, it's a computer rating, coach. He's like, well, who puts the data into the computer? Maybe we better find out where they went to school.
Yeah. Well, somebody designs what's important. That's the, like, you've seen that ESPN's FPI thing is crazy.
Yes.
Like, remember, wasn't Ohio State still number one after they lost?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, mm-hmm. some of the formula is only as good as your formula. But if you build a computer formula that's the right one, I don't know what the right one is, but. The idea of a committee is you're supposed to have smart people making informed decisions like, hey, yeah, they're undefeated, but so what? Who'd they play? And that's the exact criteria you use to hold. If SMU was 12-0, they'd be like, yeah, you're not in. You didn't play anybody. Okay. Then we play people and you go, wait a minute, these guys aren't in because they didn't play anybody, but they won all those games. This committee made my head hurt. This made my head hurt.
Yeah, there were a lot, and boy, there were a lot of people angry. I was trying to make a list, a ranking of the anger from people. Florida State, certainly.
Good use of time. I like this.
Yeah, I know, right? Anger ranking. Like, I have nothing else better to do. Number one, Florida State, right? The most angry for sure. number two, the American, specifically Mike Oresko, very angry that the Mustangs did not get the New Year's Six. Number three, would probably be the ACC. Jim Phillips has been very clear. I heard in Vegas yesterday, Monday, that Jim is there in Vegas, and he was making his feelings known. SMU, number four on the anger list, probably, maybe higher, you could argue it. And I don't really know. The number five is a bowl game. I don't really know how necessarily angry they are, but I would certainly be angry, and that's the Fiesta Bowl that is getting Liberty and Oregon. Oregon, you know, lost the Pac-12 championship game, probably had its sights on the national title and the CFP, and now is going to the Fiesta Bowl, maybe without its starting quarterback. Bo Nix said he will play, but who knows? And then they get Liberty, cross-country trip. Right, yep. for Liberty. So I don't know, that ticket sales probably aren't brisk.
I don't know how anyone goes to these bowl games when we're going to do bowl picks. Like, what? Who's in this? Who's on these teams?
It's going to be a joke.
Yeah, we're looking at, you're talking about new models, you know, this new model and everything. Like, look, man, we're looking at, you know, probably here soon a new bowl postseason model, right? I mean, something's probably got to change.
I still think they're fun, so I'll watch. I don't really care.
And there's TV spots for them always.
Yeah, and, right? And it's just younger players and stuff like that. It's just a different deal. It'll, I just don't know how the heck you gamble it, but they do. Yeah. Oh, they will.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
People watch, people gamble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of this, we'll wrap with this. Race for the Case is over.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Sean Anderson.
You win.
Wow.
50 and 34.
Wow. It's a nice percentage.
Ooh. Nice job. Damn, I came in second, 46 and 38. Ross, 44 and 40.
Man,
Pat,
I really fell off.
And 42. God. Let me just say this, okay? We do not tout ourselves as one of these gambling expert guys. There's all these podcasts where they're gambling experts. I'm the guy. This is damn good numbers right there. We picked these games 48 to 72 hours before the game. We often don't know who's playing. There's injuries, weather.
Right. Yep.
We have to pick games that we sit there and go, I don't want to pick that game. I don't know, right? I want to pat ourselves on the back. Even Tapp did well this year. 42, that's a respectable number.
500, 42 and 42.
The Gambling Expert podcast, they're not doing better than that. Sean went 50 and 34. Now, some of his picks were like, I got this annoying ass friend who's a Notre Dame fan. I want them to lose. So what? It won.
It worked. It worked. The so bottom Sean, line, what we are saying is yes, listen to us and roll your 401k into our
absolutely. Bet the house on whatever we come up with. Wait till you hear my Cheez-It Bowl prediction. Sean, you win three cases of beer. Or you could ask for I don't know, whatever you want. What are we doing here? Congratulations.
Thank you. I thought it was a fun season and a fun competition all year. I'm humbled to have come out on the plus side with all the, you know,
illustrious competition.
There were some questionable picks that I had. There were some very, I mean, the UMass versus Penn State, that was a mess.
That was a bad
but play. My dad's trying to make a push for the case of Blanton's. I said, I don't think we can do that, Pops.
A case of Blanton's. Get out of here.
No.
Case of Blanton's. Put Pappy on the list. Lord.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. A three-bedroom condo.
Where does it end?
Yeah. I had to tell him, you know what? That's not me. I am not a Blanton's guy. I'm a, you know, if you want to find, it's any bourbon, and I'll have a good time. But right. That's still not me at the true heart. I'm a Bush Light guy.
How about Bush that? Light.
My son.
How right. about that? You're just now you're just sucking up to Wetzel.
Yeah. You want three cases of Bush Light?
Do you want Bush Light peach or do you want Bush Light?
The Bush Light peach is delicious. The Bush Light apple's delicious. All of the variations are very good. But all I think right. the classic will really carry me through, what is it, the fifth? It'll carry me through to about the 15th. So I think those three will be good.
I don't even know if they come in cases anymore. It's all 30s. 90 beers through January 15th. I'll take the under on that.
Oh, I meant December.
Oh, December 15th. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, right? Come on.
I don't know what I was talking about.
Don't underestimate our man. 90 beer.
All right. All right. Congrats. You win. Get what you want. I like it. That's it. It's a hell of a competition. That's our show. We'll be back later this week. More Porto, more everything. You never know what's happening. Stay here, continue to subscribe, share us on social media, tell your friends about us. We appreciate you. Talk to you later.